Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey, this thing on? This thing work?
Hello?
Steve, you there?
I am. Are you?
I'm here, man. We are back. Dougie's back from vacation. What's going on?
I need another vacation. I'm whipped. I don't know about you,
man. I've been flying for about 3 days, I think. But did anything happen while we were gone?
I don't think so. I think we can end the podcast now.
Okay, good. Because we've got a ton to talk about. My goodness, when you try to go away for a week and then the world falls apart.
We
got lots to talk about. Yes, indeed. Say vous play and all that. The Rays, of course, today, and as a matter of fact, we'll explain their desire to explore playing half their games in Montreal. What's behind this proposal? We'll give you our thoughts on the Rays becoming the Canadian Snowbirds. And the Rays were swept by the Yankees on the field. They split their series in Oakland. Their road trip resumes in Minnesota tonight with Blake Snell. What happened to him, by the way? Last time he was on the bump, he had, what, one-third inning, six-run blowout performance against the Yankees. He's going to have to rebound from that. Let's see what else went down. The Bolts traded JT Miller, so he ends his Lightning career with an 18-game scoreless streak. But that got a lot of news, of course. And then they had a draft. They got some new players while we were gone, and their prospect camp begins today, as a matter of fact, in Brandon. And I watched the U.S. Women's World Cup team advance yesterday with a nervy 2-1 win over Spain on two penalty kicks by Megan Rapinoe. That was interesting. A lot of fun there. We've got all that. My comments about some of your comments on Gerald McCoy's appearance on Fox on this catch-up from vacation edition of Sports Day Tampa Bay. I'm Rick Stroud of the Tampa Bay Times, along with producer Steve Versnick. Hey, do you want to be a millionaire? Well, for 30 years, Howard and Sue Million have brought the cool comfort of air conditioning to the entire Tampa Bay area, making thousands of residents millionaires with their quality products and service. Now, Millionaire is currently offering 0% interest for 72 months on qualifying equipment. Give these people a call at 727-862-2100 to take advantage of this great offer on a brand-new Quality Train air conditioning unit or to schedule service or maintenance. Call 727-862-2100 today. Trust the masters of comfort, Millionaire. Okay, Steve, I don't know what time zone this is. I don't know what day this is. I left on a Saturday in Hawaii. I got back late Sunday evening. I'm 6 hours behind or ahead or however you want to say that. So I'm going to try to gut through this.
Well, I was in Western Canada and Seattle as well. So I was NHL draft in Vancouver on Friday and Saturday. So I had the same flight and time jet zone light changes back. Yeah,
it's a long way to go, but it was good to get away. Hey, our thanks to Dave Wills, to Clyde Christensen, to Diana Neros. We had, of course, even though we were on vacation, I hope you enjoyed those interviews and those podcasts while we were away. I thought they were all great interviews, and a lot of information there. Of course, it was fun going to Dave's dugout. Me and you hung out there one evening. It was quite the experience. Dave's just a great storyteller. And of course, very insightful about the Rays, and then you know, Clyde Christensen, who had a chance to listen to him, really gave some insights to what it was like joining Tony Dungy's staff back in '96. He's seen this thing turn around and go from worst to first before. He knows what it takes. He's also been around some pretty good quarterbacks, a guy named Peyton Manning, for example, and he talked about Jameis Winston in a way I've not heard many coaches speak about him, both on the field and off. Just a fresh pair of eyes from Clyde Christensen, who is very faith-based guy, all-pro dads and all that sort of thing, and has a different feel maybe for Jameis than people that have been around him for the last 4 or 5 years. So if you haven't had a chance to listen to those podcasts along with Diana Neros talking about the Lightning's off season. One of the things we mentioned as a possibility was JT Miller. Of course, they're trying to clear some salary cap room. They did that by trading him. So that's maybe the first of many steps, I guess, this offseason.
Yeah, and what a good deal Julian Breezeball pulled off. So he clears $5.5 million or $5.25 million of salary cap for the next 4 years. Does not have to retain any of the salary. gets back a third-round draft pick this year and a first-round draft pick either next year or the year after, depending on if Vancouver makes the playoffs or not.
Crazy. Yeah, crazy good deal to get a first-rounder involved with all that. And just the salary cap alone is going to help them. And, of course, Miller was a good player for the Lightning. Didn't score down the stretch of his games here, but was somebody that they certainly, I thought, you know, took full advantage of. And
well, and so, this wasn't a knock on JT Miller at all. I mean, this is this is about seeing where your salary cap is, knowing you still got to sign Braden Point, and you got to you're probably short a defenseman or two on this team as well. So you've got to clear some salary cap space. You've got to trade something to get something, and one of the assets they got back was salary cap relief. You know, if you look at what Toronto had to do, they traded Patrick Marleau to the Hurricanes, and they had to give up a number one pick to do that, to clear that space. Now, JT Miller's a younger player with more upside on his career, where Patrick Marleau is on the downside of his career at this point. So that's part of the reason, too. But, you know, a good move by Julian Breezeball. Not that you wanted to get rid of JT Miller, but he was one of the ones with a mid-range cap number at just over $5 million. And he did not have a no move or no trade clause like some of the players like Tyler Johnson and Andre Palat and others have at this point. So
that's right. No, it was a good deal, I thought, for probably both teams right now, but that was necessary. So let's talk about what was really happening while we were gone. And of course, that story will pick up even more so today when the Tampa Bay Rays and their ownership, Stuart Sternberg, and some of the, I suppose he'll be the one talking about this, maybe exclusively. I don't know who else will be involved. But this idea that was that broke while we were away about the Rays' possible plan, desire perhaps to at least explore playing half their games in Montreal the way this was positioned by the Rays. And again, they'll have their say, their full say today. And I think people need to wait and sort of listen to just what their thoughts are, although this idea would appear to be dead on arrival, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But to try to play half their games in Montreal, it was stunning. It was clumsy the way it was rolled out. You know, I think it kind of broke maybe through Major League Baseball sources more than the Rays, and you know, that's because the baseball gave sort of their permission at least to explore this idea of playing in two cities, and that was the way it was sort of positioned, that the first part of the season, first half of the season, perhaps be played in Tampa Bay, and then the team would then move to Montreal, and that leaves just all kinds of questions, not the least of which is, are you building a new stadium? And if so, how in the world would this make this even more appetizing to anyone in Tampa Bay to want to build the Rays a stadium if they're only going to be here half the season? And what about Montreal? If you can't build one, would you need to build two? And I think, you know, we've talked about this during the whole, you know, stadium debates, and we've you know, chronicled, obviously discussed their, you know, desire to move to Tampa and the 3 years they had during those negotiations, and that broke down, and the plan in Ybor City and all those things. But one thing we've said, Steve, consistently is that, you know, in the stadium business, you need leverage, right? I've always found that to be the case. I mean, it's how, you know, Tampa Bay helped build stadiums throughout Major League Baseball in you know, the new Comiskey Park in Chicago, for example, the Giants Stadium, the Minnesota Twins. There were a lot of teams, Seattle, involved with flirtations after, you know, the Tropicana Field, or at that time the Thunderdome, was built in St. Petersburg back in 1995, I think it was, and you know, housed multi-sports, including the Lightning and others. But it sat there as leverage, and it was leverage for the Bucks when the city of Baltimore decided and approved financing to build a stadium in that city in hopes of, you know, returning an NFL team there. And that was, quite frankly, the Glazers' leverage, that they would move to Baltimore. Now, it turned out Art Modell beat them to it, and that's another story. But it was all part of the stadium game. And I don't know how serious they are. We'll find out more about Sternberg. I mean, it's been positioned that this is a way to continue to try to make it viable here in the Tampa Bay market. But there's so many things wrong with this, Steve, that I think, you know, it goes, as John Romano said, from collaborative to combative. You know what I mean? And you know, it's almost like there's two things you take away from this. And you know, John mentioned this too. But, I mean, one is that, you know, they're willing to move. I think the biggest one, let's just leave it at one. The biggest one thing is that you have to take seriously that they're willing to move. They are looking and planning to not stay here unless they can find a solution. And forgetting about where it might be, and you know, for the minute, Montreal certainly is a city that had baseball with the Expos that would like to get it back there. And so, you know, there are other markets, I'm sure, other cities in this country, you know, Las Vegas, Charlotte, Nashville, whatever, that would probably want to be in the baseball game too if they could be. But I think you have to at least take for a moment seriously that that they've kind of reached wit's end here and are looking for a way out or for a way to make this work that's non-conventional. And so, you know, it's shocking. I don't think it could work playing half a season in another city. You know, there was a time when the Expos were going to move. They played some of their games in Puerto Rico. It was a prelude to relocation. So I think, you know, we all deserve to give Sternberg a chance to explain this and what the thinking behind it and just exactly what his intentions are. But a two-stadium solution, Steve, I don't think is really viable.
Well, my first question, and I don't know if we'll get the answer to this tomorrow or you know, a full answer, is have the Rays decided that a full season of baseball can't work in this market? Or is this just looking at options? Has a decision been made by the organization that it cannot work here for 81 games? And I don't know if they have an answer to that. They may not have that answer yet. But, you know, as you said, the stadium debates are all about leverage. Mm-hmm. This is a way for them to get leverage. Now, whether it's a serious proposal that they're thinking of, and they may not have all the details yet, as, you know, if they've just got permission to explore this at this point, how far down the road are they with anyone? And what's Montreal willing to do for a half season compared to a full season, et cetera? But I guess my biggest thing is what do the Rays think of this market? And I don't think they're going to tell us today. But that's where, you know, my first thought is do they believe it cannot work here? Or is this just we're looking at all options, which is what they should be doing? This is an option most people never thought of or wouldn't consider because it is pretty far outside the box. But is this just exploring, or are they already down the road where they don't think it can work here?
Well, I don't know. They're definitely down the road, and I think, you know, it's been 14 years since he's owned the team. I think, you know, this is really him saying he's not above moving the team. I mean, I think this is the first evidence that, you know, and in some ways, as John Romano wrote, you know, you really can't blame Sternberg. I mean, we've seen them being a disappointment in this market in terms of attendance. It doesn't seem to matter if they win or they lose. They've tried every imaginable way to be creative and against an American League East that outspends them 3-1 sometimes to stay competitive, and they've done that. But there just hasn't been anyone to step up in any way to really kind of help save them. But, you know, by the same token, I mean, Sternberg has been very coy and noncommittal about what he is willing to invest in a new stadium, what he is willing to deliver. Certainly he wants, you know, the community, the politicians, and everybody to step up and come up in the business community, come up with a way to finance a stadium. But, you know, it's one of those deals where I think that if you're somebody in Tampa Bay that cares about baseball, whether you're Rick Kreisman or whoever it is, I think at this point, you have to understand that this team is willing to go. So, you know, that being the case, you know, you got to kind of say that, look, they're under a contract, they're under a lease agreement that could keep the Rays in St. Petersburg and handcuff them there for another more than 8 seasons.
Well, it does. And Rick Kreisman said that he was approached about this a few weeks ago and said absolutely not. And baseball, so, I mean, and the Rays knew this before word got out.
But if you're Tampa Bay or St. Petersburg in particular, that's your leverage, right? Like, you can make this as uncomfortable as possible. Mm-hmm. And what would be worse for Stuart Sternberg and the Rays than to be told, sorry, you're here for another 8-plus seasons. We don't care where you go after that. You know, that's not what Stuart Sternberg wants, clearly.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't want to spend another 8 seasons at Tropicana Field with nobody coming to his games and, you know, and owning what, you know, at that point. What are his options? Do you keep trying to field competitive teams? Like, what do you do? If you can't get out of that lease, it's not – none of this matters. So they're not they're not likely to let him out of it. So that's the city, that's the city's leverage or Tampa Bay's leverage. What this really is I think the first – acknowledgement that you will lose this baseball team, that yes, they're willing to leave. They're trying to sell something that would help them in that direction. If they could convince Kreisman or the city council to be, you know, tempted, I don't think there's any way that they will be. I don't think there's any way that they go for this. But you know, it they'll have their say today. They'll, you know, Stuart Sternberg can talk all he wants to about what he still thinks about the viability of baseball in Tampa Bay, whether he thinks it can work in St. Pete, whether it's, you know, Tampa or nothing. I mean, whatever he wants to say, he's going to get lots of opportunity to do this because, you know, it seems as if this was done for the main reason of trying to gain an upper hand. I mean, the mm-hmm. Rays were nowhere in these talks, right? I mean, they're basically you know, they got the agreement to go talk to Hillsborough for 3 years. They did a stadium site. They found an area in Ybor City. They thought it would work. They did all these drawings. They, you know, organized. There was a, you know, a business community that organized trying to think of ways to, and it went nowhere. Okay, it went absolutely nowhere because there's not an appetite in the general public sometimes for using, you know, tax mm-hmm. money and you know, government funds for this sort of thing when you have so many other needs. So, I mean, obviously the Rays needed some leverage. And we mm-hmm. talked about this. I mean, this is the way you get your deals done. You have to have at least a willingness to go somewhere else and preferably a landing spot. I mean, if you mm-hmm. can find a city like Montreal or any place else, now the whole idea of playing half the season here and all that, I mean, I just, you know, that's silly to me in some ways.
It definitely logistically becomes an issue, and particularly when you're splitting it with Canada as well.
Yeah.
So, you know, now you've got, you know, especially you got, you know, now you're living in two different places, two different countries even, to make
right.
this work.
Imagine what the Players Association feels about that, right? You're a player for the Rays and you got to have two mm-hmm. residences. Who's paying for that? Where does my family live?
Well, I'm assuming at that point, you know, for the Players Association to agree to it, you're going to have a lot of concessions of... You know, you're going to get extra stipends at the time you're in Montreal or in Tampa, whichever one, or, you know, per diems or whatever it is, you know.
Right.
That can be worked out.
Well, but from a free agent standpoint, if I have a family, they can only mm-hmm. go to school in one city.
That's
right?
True. So, that's true.
You know, at least for August through June, they're going to have to live someplace. And, mm-hmm. and I play on the road half the time anyway, but then if I'm playing half my games in Montreal – after June, you know, 30th or whatever, yep. You know, maybe my kids are out of school and they can join me in a temporary residence, but it just seems so clunky until then they're going back to school in September, but I'm still in Montreal till October. I mean, this, you know, it's not very tenable for families and for professional mm-hmm. athletes who already spend a good amount of time and sacrifice time away from their family. Yep. So, there's a lot of logistic issues, obviously.
The thing I took away, the two things, was one, have the Rays determined that baseball can't work in this market? And I don't believe they have that answer yet. Because right. I still believe it works in this market, but the stadium's in absolutely the wrong location. And if their desire is to build another stadium in St. Pete or renovate Al Lang mm-hmm. to do a half season, I still don't think it works in this market.
Right.
Because it's the businesses that aren't there. And we've talked about... Baseball, all sports need businesses support.
I mean, sure.
That's what the whole Ybor City thing was about, was trying to get the businesses about. Now, the other part of this is, and we can go back to the 3 years with Hillsborough County, it never felt like there was a sense of urgency from anyone in that search, including the Rays. Now, and that's the public perception. I can't tell you exactly what went on behind the scenes because I don't know. But publicly, it never felt like they had any sense of urgency to get that deal done. It took them 2 years before they unveiled the plans out of the 3-year window, and it was just slow. It just never felt like there was a, for the first time, it feels like the Rays have a sense of urgency now.
Well, and I think Sternberg acknowledged after that deadline passed that he probably should have been more assertive during that time, that he didn't feel like he, you know, pressed hard enough to try to make to get that, bring it to a conclusion. But part of that, a lot of it's on him, too, from this standpoint, I think, Steve, is that, you know, he hasn't really been very forthcoming about his commitment. You know, not just, I mean, he has said consistently he thinks that baseball will work, can work, should work in Tampa Bay. He doesn't want to leave, likes the market, blah, blah, blah. Certainly has an issue with the location of the stadium. And, of course, it's antiquated and all those things. Wants a new deal closer to Tampa, Hillsborough County. All those things he's talked about. But he hasn't really said, and, oh, by the way, I'm in it for half the cost. You know, like there's been this moving sort of commitment target financially from his standpoint. So, I mean, I think the area, the city, before they enter any real meaningful negotiations, have got to find out exactly what you're saying. One, do you still want to be here? Because if you don't, you know, hey, enjoy your next 8-plus seasons at the Trop and we'll see you later. Because that's their leverage. You know, we want you here, but you're going to have to be committed too. You know, and what is your level of commitment, and how do you demonstrate that? Well, you demonstrate that with a financial commitment. And yes, they have you know, done things to the Trop and try to make it viable, and they have spent money on players before, and other years they've spent less, but they've put a competitive team on the field, and to some extent that's their lone sort of responsibility, is to field a competitive team. I think they've done that more often than not with Sternberg as the owner. So in many ways, he's lived up to that end of it. But if you're talking about a new stadium, I mean, I can't see, you know, hey, let's renovate or build a small, you know, stadium where on the Al Lang site, and, you know, we'll play, you know, 40-something games there. I mean, that to me is not a solution. Maybe it wouldn't require as many seats. But quite frankly, I can't imagine the fans of that ball club getting behind anything where you would, you know, you would basically be losing them, you know, at the end of June, beginning of July, for this, after the All-Star break. And then what happens if they make the playoffs? Where's their home games going to be? I mean, there's so many, you know, unanswered questions, and it just seems like a weird plan to begin with. But I do think that it does signal the first step out of town if they can't get this resolved, and get it resolved rather quickly. And to that point, you know, it had to happen. I mean, I've been saying this, that, like, you know, the best deal you get is on the day of the deadline, you know. And I still go back, you know, and it was a different time and a different era, and it's probably not even feasible today. But I tell anybody that the Glazers were gone. They were out of here. They weren't from here. They're from Rochester, New York. They were willing to move this team. They thought it could work in Tampa, but they did not have a stadium deal, and they weren't going to keep playing at the old Sombrero. And Baltimore was their leverage. And I will never forget the day that Art Modell shocked people. Imagine moving the Cleveland Browns, for goodness sakes, to Baltimore. And then, of course, Cleveland, you know, got an expansion team after that. And then what happened when Modell left? He had been trying to get a stadium there for years. They built the Indians one. But then when Modell pulls his team out of town, they build a new stadium. The NFL puts an expansion team back in Cleveland. So, you know, the stadium game is just played that way. And if it wasn't for Rich McKay, who I don't think still gets enough credit for his contacts within the political realm and understanding the politics of Hillsborough County, to get Hillsborough County to attach a stadium sale, revenue money to build the stadium on a half-cent sales tax that also funded police, firemen, and schools. I mean, you know, they bundled those things, right? Who's against firemen? Who's against police? Who's against the schools? They actually got that attached to a referendum, and it passed by less than 5% on a day after Tony Dungy made his debut and lost like 34-3 to the Green Bay Packers. So this was a nervous, nervous time, and it passed, you know, again, by the smallest margins. I just think that we're going to go through this similar experience now, and we'll hear what Stewart has to say. We'll see what the city and the counties and for that matter, Tampa Bay's response to what Sternberg's plan is. If they try to continue to push this idea of two stadiums, I think it's dead on arrival. I think, you know, the mayor, Rick Kreisman, has already spoke to that and said that is not happening. So that'll be a non-starter, but they can pitch it if they want to. And I think, you know, I think we all have to listen to their ideas. And to your point, Steve, I think the biggest question is, do the Rays still want to be in Tampa Bay, or is this the first?
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Sign that they're not committed to staying here. We know now they will leave. We know that that's certainly something that they're willing to do. But how committed are they to remaining in Tampa Bay? And I think that's what people want to hear from Stuart Sternberg. Okay, so on the field, it hasn't gone so well of late. I don't think there's any relation to it because they were well into this road trip when it happened. But it's the June swoon, you know, and it's inevitable. I think every baseball team goes through these periods, you know, and for the Rays, it was a combination of some blow up and some blown saves by Diego Castillo, who, by the way, after blowing a couple of those saves, suddenly came up with shoulder injuries.
Yeah, you think he might have got sent down to AAA and, oh, my arm hurts. I'm going to stay on the big league roster and get paid for service time.
Boy, you hate to think that. I mean, you really don't want to think that a professional athlete would think of the ramifications or the finances of that, but it looked like he may have been headed that way. Then again, they don't have a whole lot of options in the back end of their bullpen to begin with. Yeah. I mean, you know, this whole thing with Jose Alvarado, you know, leaving for as long as he did to go home to Venezuela for personal reasons. He's done this at other stops in his career. And so you really don't know what was going on with that. And he wasn't pitching that well when he left. But he should be back soon. So, you know, I think offensively is where they kind of went into the doldrums, you know, especially in Yankee Stadium. They got shut down by the Yankees pitching for the most part and then got behind in every game. And Blake Snell, goodness gracious, he's on the mound today against Minnesota. That's one of the, or probably the worst outing maybe in his career, a third of an inning and six runs.
Yeah, you'd like to see him bounce back. And, you know, look, he's a reigning Cy Young Award winner. When he's had bad games in the past, he's come out a lot stronger the next game. So you're hoping that's what he can do against a very potent Minnesota lineup.
Yeah, it's going to be a tough treading up there in Minnesota. And they've got you know, they got Charlie Morton on the mound against Jake Odorizzi the next day. So that game will take about an hour and 10 minutes. Those guys both throw strikes. So, you know, it's been a tough road trip for the Rays. They've I think yesterday was the first time in nine games that they actually gained ground.
In 9 days, yeah.
On the Yankees, in 9 days on the Yankees and the Red Sox. And this is their first day off was Monday in a long time. And one of their only days off during this interminable stretch of consecutive games here going on.
Yeah, this is that stretch where they have, 34 games in 34 days and 47 and 48 leading into the All-Star break, which will take place in 2 weeks. You know, so this is a grind. I mean, people don't – you know, I've traveled with a baseball team before, and granted, I'm just, you know, doing the broadcasting part of it and that. But,
sure.
You know, baseball's a grind, you know, unlike – and all sports are. But I mean, you're playing pretty much every day, and when you get these long stretches of, you know, 20 days in a row of playing and – you know, it's not the physical grind; it's the mental grind. It's, you know, and as the older I get, the more I appreciate vacations, and how you need a mental break.
From
work, from doing the same thing every day.
Yeah,
you know, even just your weekends or a day off a week. You know, it does a lot for you mentally and recharges you. You know, and then there's the physical aspect of you're halfway through the season now and all that stuff too. So there's that part, but the mental grind of it that. You know, you'd like to see the bullpen be a lot better. And I think, you know, if nothing else, this June swoon, we've seen they need a lot of help in the bullpen. Mm-hmm. And you hope Jose Alvarado, when he gets back, will be part of that. Chaz Rose pitched better of late. Still not where he needs to be in this bullpen. Diego Castillo, obviously, having some issues. So, you know, I'm hoping that you'll see the Rays start making some moves sooner than later. I mean, you don't have to wait till the trade deadline to make a move. They need bullpen help, and they need it fast. Because you know, when you keep blowing leads consistently, that wears on a staff and a team. You know, you get late in games, and you have no faith in your bullpen.
Yeah.
As a team, that's bad. That's not good. That's not good for the psyche of a team. And it, you know, I mean, you know, there are blown saves all the time, but you can't be blowing them consistently.
Right, and then you get a bad start, which they're counting on, you know, with all the openers for Blake Snell and, you know, to go deep into games, and then he blows up after a third of an inning. So that Yankee series, you know, the Yankees, let's be honest, they're not going away. They're getting guys back now. They make the trade for – that's the other thing that happened was they made a pretty big trade for yet another home run hitter. And, oh, by the way, he delivered right away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Edward Encarnacion to add to the lineup of Stanton, and now Judge is back.
Judge is back, yeah.
Yeah, so, that is a loaded team. That lineup is loaded, and their bullpen is locked down as well.
Yeah. To be honest with you, I mean, baseball, you know, for as much as you can go back and look at, you know, people talk about football and how, you know, the Patriots have won all these Super Bowls, and it seems like it's not the same teams every year. The Patriots are the constant, of course, but there's been a lot of different teams, you know, win World Series, compete for World Series, but more and more, I mean, I look at the Dodgers and the Yankees, and if those two teams aren't in the World Series, the Dodgers have been in the last two, I'd be stunned. I'd be absolutely stunned if you don't see the Dodgers and or the Yankees in the World Series. I mean, it just seems like they're that much better than everybody. But the Rays still have, as we do this podcast, like a 2.5, 3-game lead or so for the first wild card.
But there's a group of teams behind them now that are closing in. It's not just like one team. It's
right.
You got the Indians are playing better of late. The Red Sox, mm-hmm. the Rangers.
Red Sox. Mm-hmm.
I mean, you've got a group of teams trying to catch the Rays. You know, I think the Rays need to start making a move, particularly in the bullpen, sooner than later.
I would agree with that.
You know, you can't keep having, you know, now you're going to have probably Emilio Pagan close games this week in Minnesota, but who's going to pitch in front of him to get you the ninth inning?
Right.
You know, it's kind of scary to look at right now.
Yeah, they definitely need help, and we'll see. You know, Minnesota's is had the best record in baseball for quite a while, and they're still, you know, winning their division by a large stretch, and I think they're going to face some tough pitching and a good hitting ball club up there in Minnesota. So this will not be an easy series for them. It's been a bad road trip so far. After being swept by the Yankees, they take 2 out of 4 against the Oakland A's, and then now it's on to Minnesota as they wrap that up and they come home to an uncertain future. I know a lot of these guys, this is the other thing, like, you know, for most of these players, we're talking it could be a number of years before anything happens with the Rays in terms of relocation or stuff like that. And I don't really necessarily think it's on their minds necessarily, but I thought it was interesting that Sternberg and I guess some of their front office folks did contact a few of the players, got text messages in advance of this news breaking, which was interesting. But it's just one more thing, right? It's just one more thing that you're human and you're reading about this. Mm-hmm. And, you know, well, it does.
It's like what happens at the trade deadline every year is that players that are potentially going to be traded or talked about, it affects you. I mean, as much as you try not to and you try to focus on just the game, but, you know, it affects you. It affects your family. It affects your kids. Mm-hmm. You know, am I going to have to move? Am I going to have to, all this stuff out? They're human. I mean, and it, you know, as much as you try to block it out, and some can do it better than others, of course, but, you know, it does affect players. And it's amazing how, you know, it doesn't matter the sport, NBA, NHL, baseball, after the trade deadline, a lot of times you'll see players that were struggling all of a sudden play better because there's a weight lifted off of them that they're not worried about that anymore. And in baseball this year, too, don't forget that there's no more August trade. They got rid of that waiver trades in August. All trades have to be done by July 31st now. You can't go into August and clear waivers and then trade a player. That's baseball did away with that this year. So that's going to be interesting how that affects the trade deadline too. Is you don't, you know, you've got to make the moves before July 31st. You can't carry it into August like you have in years past.
All right. Yeah, all that. I'm glad you mentioned things weighing on players and how professional athletes are human, because while I was away, Gerald McCoy made an appearance on with Skip and
who?
Skip Bayless?
No, I mean,
Skip
Bayless? Who? Gerald?
Oh, Joe, yeah, G-Mac. Yeah, number 93. Well, the old number 93. Anyway, for the Buccaneers.
We're not supposed to care about him anymore, right? Because he doesn't play here anymore, right?
He's not a Buccaneer player. Buccaneer fans don't want to hear about anything except Buccaneer players. So, you know, what the heck? I had 6-hour time difference, had some time on my hands while I was waiting for everyone else to wake up at 5 o'clock in the morning because we all were jet-lagged out there in Hawaii. But, yeah, I got on the interweb and I watched that sort of interview, if you will, with Gerald McCoy. And a couple of things. One, he was asked to do the show. He could have turned it down. And we know that Gerald, you know, has some media savvy to him. I mean, he's not someone that's ever been shy of the camera, for God's sakes. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. As a journalist, I like guys that speak their mind when they eventually do and they say something, as opposed to spitting out a bunch of meaningless cliches, which apparently fans prefer, or some fans seem to. But basically what he said I thought was newsworthy, and it's because it involved the Buccaneers, and that is sort of the handling or the mishandling of his release, which I still maintain was botched almost from the start. The Bucs sort of wanted to have it both ways. They wanted to maintain the sort of, you know, the appearance that Gerald McCoy had great value to them in an attempt to trade him. And then upon realizing that nobody would take on his salary, because as soon as you pick up the phone or allow his agent to pick up the phone and ask about a possible trade, everybody realizes that, you know, you're not going to pay that contract, so why not wait until he becomes a free agent? And that's exactly what happened. But one of the revelations that I thought was newsworthy, because if I'm a free agent, and I don't mean Ndamukong Suh, who, you know, apparently I don't know how many teams contacted him, but, you know, at this point in his career, we've talked about it, and he's, you know, give me a check, I will play for you type guy. I think that it affects, you know, how you treat your players, you know, send signals to your guys on your current team that could become free agents that are deciding whether to re-sign deals with you or to move on someplace else. And, you know, the idea that the Buccaneer coaches or Jason Light, for that in particular, would not pick up a phone and call Gerald McCoy directly at some point. I know he was talking to his agent, Ben Dahlgren. A lot of times it's better to involve the agent than the player. But we know the rhetoric that came from Bruce Arians, who really, you know, aside from walking in the building and Gerald being there working out that day and shaking hands with him, had no interaction with Gerald McCoy. He's never coached McCoy. He doesn't know really what his value to the team was beyond what he sees on tape. And if he didn't like what was on tape, that's fine. That happens. This is pro football. Nobody's crying, least of all Gerald McCoy, about the fact that the Bucs wanted to move on. That happens every day, and it did happen to greater players than Gerald McCoy with this very organization. Derek Brooks, Warren Sapp, John Lynch, we can name them. They all were given, you know, a copy of the home game and told, you know, your services are no longer needed here. Go someplace else or don't play at all. And, you know, two of those guys are in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. So even McCoy realizes that is professional sports. And so I don't think he has a problem with that per se, that the team had decided at some point that he wasn't worth $13 million. And that was the contract, by the way, that they signed him to. No one put a gun to their heads. They signed him to this contract. Yeah, it wasn't guaranteed. So both sides knew that there might be a decision to be made after last season. And I think Gerald reflected that in sort of his demeanor after the last game that they played in 2018. But this notion that, you know, you wouldn't pick up the phone and call the guy and be forthright, at least with him, as a new coaching staff. I mean, even coming in, I mean, just the very idea that maybe you'd want to get to know the guy a little bit. Maybe, you know, aside, if you didn't like what you saw on tape, maybe be forthright in saying, hey, look, we don't think we want you to play for $13 million. You know, my understanding is that there was never really a meaningful discussion about how much less money they were willing to give Gerald McCoy. You know, there can be some debate about that. He wasn't clear in the interview whether or not he was offered to take less money to remain here. But I do know this, that if you're a player who spent 9 seasons in one organization and they have not really, let's be honest, they haven't put a great team around Gerald McCoy. I know everybody thinks that number 93 is the reason why they lost, you know, for the last 11 years, but he was only on the team 9 of those. And so, you know, nobody on his defensive line ever made a Pro Bowl while he was here. And you know, they've had 5 coaches and, you know, 8 defensive coordinators and 15 or so defensive line coaches. And so all that impacts you as a professional athlete. So if you came to me and said, hey, we're not going to honor the contract we signed you to, but would you take less money thereby becoming a free agent? Well, if I'm going to be a free agent, I'm going to look at everything. I'm going to look at all teams. Why would, you know, unless I just want to finish my career here for some nostalgic reason, my family, that's certainly a consideration. But, you know, Gerald McCoy gave them 9 seasons. Maybe he, you know, he didn't feel the love or felt like Arians was very committed to him. Maybe he didn't feel like he was a great fit for the defense. I mean, hell, they didn't have a chance to talk to the man. He talked to Todd Bowles one time, again, another, you know, sort of, meaning in at one Buck place, but there was never any, like, you know, here's how we think you will fit. Here's what we've done with players like you in the past that moved to a 3-4. So what is McCoy supposed to do? You know, there's this feeling that people think that, you know, well, he went to Carolina to spite the Bucks. You know what? Maybe he did. But if I'm a free agent, what am I supposed to consider the team that released me first before I make my decision about where to play? I mean, is the NFC South off limits because that would be too personal? I mean, it's ridiculous. You're going to go where you get the best opportunity for your family. It's an hour and a half away or an hour away by airplane. It's in the NFC South, the division he's familiar with. Maybe he thinks they can win. Maybe he thinks Cam Newton, who's been in the playoffs for the last 6 years, who went to a Super Bowl three or four years ago, maybe he believes in that team and Ron Rivera more than he does the Cleveland Browns or even the Baltimore Ravens or what other opportunities that he had. So, you know, this was not done despite anybody, but I think the news that the Bucs did not call him, that he didn't speak to people in the coaching staff or, more importantly, the front office during this period personally, is disrespectful to him. You can agree with it or not, but these guys are human beings. You know, he did everything right off the field, for God's sakes. He carried himself well. He could have said a lot of things during those 9 years where they were losing. And I thought, for the most part, you know, he was pretty forthright about being loyal to this organization. So, you know, for the guy to come out and reveal this, I think it's newsworthy. And I think it will impact Lavonte David. I think it's going to impact other free agents when they get to become free agents. If you're Mike Evans and you're sitting back and you're watching this, you know, he just signed a new deal, right? But he's got to know that first year's not guaranteed. Well, guess what? You know, if you're a guy that's going to be up for a new deal soon, you have to think about, you're watching all of this. So, you know, I'm going to comment on it, and I am on record because I don't believe it was handled very well. I thought Gerald's, you know, appearance, while, you know, some Buck fans obviously thought it was whining and crying, he was just, to me, he was being honest. He was revealing something we didn't know. And I don't think it reflects well on the Bucs necessarily, but they have moved on, and Ndamukong Suh is their defensive tackle. And we are going to be talking and writing exclusively about 2019 in a very short time when they start training camp on, what, July 25th?
Yeah, a month from today.
Yeah, we're 1 month. I mean, it's unbelievable. I mean, because we know what a grind. This is it's an 11-and-a-half-month deal, the NFL is, with the draft and the free agency and all those things, OTAs and training camps and stuff. So, you know, this is – we're going to be moving forward very quickly here. And you know, so by the way, 4 days after their opener against the San Francisco 49ers at Raymond James, they will be in Carolina for a Thursday night game. Are we not going to talk about Gerald McCoy then? I just want to make sure that some of the trolls and people on Twitter are okay with the notion that maybe that week at least, Gerald McCoy might be in the news, okay? Because I think he's going to look forward to playing his former team, and I think Sue will look forward to being on the Bucs defense during that particular game as well and seeing what he can do against Cam Newton. So there's a lot of storylines, and that's what makes the NFL, you know, so exciting and the fans so interested in it, is because they can't get enough of this in the offseason. So we're going to give it to them. Whether you guys like it or not, I am not a personal friend of Gerald McCoy's. He has not had dinner with me. I don't go over to his house and, you know, bring birthday presents to his kids or anything like that. I mean, some of these people, I'll just say this, that, and I'll end on this, is that it's interesting to me that people turn this into a, you know, personal attacks when really there's no need for that. I mean, I had some nice block parties while I was away because some of these guys or girls or whoever they are, because they're faceless and nameless, of course, on Twitter, and some of them I message directly. I just don't understand. You know, this is a job that I do and have done for more than 20-something years. And so, you know, to take it personal, I'm also amazed how one player out of 22 on the field and hundreds over the last 11 years, if not 1,000, gets the blame or shoulders so much of this criticism when no one points the finger at the ownership. You know, they're the ones that hired these coaches. They're the ones that have fired these coaches. And they're the constant for 11 seasons of no playoffs. Zero. Okay? And you still have, you know, plenty of people over there that have been associated with many, many of these losing seasons. But it's always, you know, it's always the player who sort of bears the brunt of this. But people give a hall pass to the organization. I've never quite understood that. But that's it. I'm off my soapbox. I just wanted to, you know, people to hear it, since they were having a lot of fun on Twitter and going back and forth. But I don't have any Gerald McCoy stories planned until maybe the first week of the regular season after they play San Francisco. We'll see what happens after that. But That was also interesting on vacation. Okay, the final thing. Steve, did you catch any of this Women's World Cup game against Spain?
I did, and the U.S. has been dominating in the group stage. They outscored their opponents like 19-0 in the group stage of the tournament. And then they're playing Spain, who they are significantly more better than, at least talent-wise and rankings-wise. And, boy, did they struggle.
They did struggle, although I give Spain some credit. I mean, I thought Spain got away with a number of penalties. They could have blown the whistle and thrown a lot more yellow cards up. They were physical. They beat up Morgan. I mean, she took some blows.
They definitely had a good game plan. It was very physical, and they took a lot of, they gave the U.S. a lot of ground and then counterpunched and or
they
you know,
did
counter-strike, and that was their game plan. And you know, the U.S. had scored a penalty kick goal, Megan Rapinoe, early in the game. And 2 minutes later, Spain comes back and ties it, which I thought was, you know, key for them to stay in the game and keep the pressure on the U.S. And ends up, the U.S. gets two penalty kick goals to win 2-1, which was kind of a surprising outlook.
It was. They had some adversity, though, and that's always good when you can prevail with that. But what did you think of the second PK call? Did you think there was a lot of contact there? Or
I didn't think it was a lot of contact, but, you know, look, if that was in midfield in the middle of a game, studs up and you hit the leg, they're going to call that a penalty every time.
Yeah,
I mean,
true.
That's, you know, when your studs are that high in the air and you hit someone in the leg because you came in late, it's a penalty. I mean, maybe it's a, you know, it's then it's that whole thing of if it's a penalty in the first minute in the middle of the field, why isn't it a penalty in the 75th minute in the penalty box?
Right.
Or, you know, and we talk about that in hockey a lot of, you know, well, they're not going to call that, you know, in a playoff game. Well, if they call it all season, why not?
Right. And Megan Rapinoe, she was not going to take the second kick at first, and then they had an instant replay review, and I guess the coaches decided now she's their best PK person.
Well, I wonder if that was a little gamesmanship, too, and JP Della Camera and Allie Wagner talked about on the broadcast of, you know, so that you're waiting for the delay. Alex Morgan's going to take the kick. You're going to VAR. Mm-hmm. So the goalie's thinking through Alex Morgan, okay, where does she like to go this? And then you switched it. After that, you know, maybe that was some gamesmanship on the U.S., or maybe the coach just decided, no, Alex, you're not taking it. Megan's taking it. I haven't seen any of the post-game comments if they talked about that at all. But, you know, there's always some gamesmanship.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Alex Morgan didn't seem to have a big problem with it. She just said it was a coach's decision, and they went with the player that was that's the best at it. I mean, Alex Morgan is not known as a great penalty kick player. Surprisingly, as good of a scorer as she is, but
I don't know how many she gets a chance to take. I mean, I think Megan takes a lot of them on the team.
Yeah, not many, but the, you know, as far as I they gave her percentage, it wasn't exceedingly high. It wasn't, like you said, she didn't take as many, so there's that. But they went with the best player, and she scored, and so they advance, and they're now in the quarterfinals
against France.
Against France, which is the home team. That'll be quite an atmosphere, I would think, over there.
It will be. The game sold out and was sold out already, and many thought the U.S. would be in that spot. So a lot of U.S. fans already have their tickets. It'll be interesting how the fan base is, whether it's pro-USA or pro-France in that game. It'll be a lot of red, white, and blue in the stands. We know that.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I felt like I've been gone a long time, but after that, I realized that I have been gone a long time. That was a lot of stuff to try to digest, and, of course, now we're sort of up to date. So, tomorrow we'll bring you what Sternberg has.
We have to do this again tomorrow? We don't get on the vacation yet?
No, man, it's every day. We will be going soon, though. We'll have another vacation planned. I take a lot of vacation because I get a lot of vacation, but, yeah, we're going to go away.
Next one will be shorter. Around the 4th of July, we'll be gone for a couple days.
But we'll have plenty of shows for you during that time. And again, my thanks to Dave Wills and, of course, Diana Neros and Clyde Christensen for providing that content while we were away. I thought it was very good. So Sternberg will talk today at 1 o'clock. We'll bring you what he has to say. We'll discuss that on tomorrow's podcast. We've got the Rays at Minnesota. Blake Snell on the mound trying to avenge maybe the worst outing of his career the last time out at Yankee Stadium. So we'll have plenty for Wednesday's show as well. And remember, folks, I know you got a lot of choices when it comes to air conditioning companies. This time of year, you do not want to have your air conditioner go on to blink. And so do yourselves a favor. Call Howard and Sue Million at Millionaire. They've been doing this a long time in the Tampa Bay area. Right now, you get 0% interest for 72 months on their qualifying equipment. So give these folks a call, whether you need service or maintenance, at 727-862-2100. Do that today. Trust the masters of comfort, Millionaire. Okay, for a no longer vacationing Steve Versnick, I'm Rick Stroud of the Tampa Bay Times. Have a great day, everybody.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.